Mama, we all go to hell. Mama, we all go to hell. I'm writing this letter and wishing you well. Mama, we all go to hell.
First one's maybe not true. The second one might be, I don't know. But what I do know is it is Friday. It is the Maggie Dawn show, and I am not Maggie Dawn. Sorry to disappoint, but instead it's me, Anya, back again, taking you to the weekend in Maggie's stead. Lots to talk about today. Very dark out for a Friday 6 o'clock. Right now in Wisconsin. I don't understand how daylight savings is supposed to work if we've clearly spent it already. How could we possibly have spent all of that sunlight we saved up by getting that extra hour of sleep like 3 weeks ago? How could it be gone? I don't know if I understand it. But what I do understand is how this show works. I'm pretty good at that so far. And the way that it works is give me a call at 844-967-2789 if you want to contribute to today's show. Let's get into the meat of it. All the way back on Monday at the beginning of this week, it feels like a million years ago, we had on a fantastic guest by the name of John Dietrich, who has authored four articles for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel regarding his research into gun deaths in Wisconsin and what is causing those gun deaths? Is it crime? His research found no, not in the sense of someone pulling a gun on someone else and killing them or engaging in theft or mugging of these things. Rather, that gun deaths, especially in rural parts of Wisconsin, were growing because there were so many suicides happening by gun. And that a huge number of those suicides that were occurring in our state and continue to occur in our state were men in rural areas. If you didn't hear that episode, really important stuff. John and Maggie summarize it a lot better than I could. Make sure to go back and listen to it. But we teased at the end of that episode that I would be coming on to talk about a couple other gun issues in this country. Obviously, that's not what I talked about on Wednesday, but today is the day for such discussions to happen. First off is a bill moving through the, the bill that we are talking about regarding veterans and their access to guns. The bill known as the Veterans Second Amendment Protection Act is being put forward by Republicans who feel that when a veteran is experiencing a mental health crisis, when a veteran is experiencing a time where their mental health is not being cared for, that the VA officials, Veterans Affairs officials who become aware of this, they have the option essentially right now to make it so that that particular veteran cannot purchase a gun at that time, right? You have someone who is suffering, someone who is maybe going through depression, anxiety, PTSD, any of a number of the conditions that our veterans have. And the VA can say, well, while we work through this with you and while you work through this, we're going to suspend your ability to purchase a gun. And this bill, moving through the U.S. Congress, would ask VA officials to not share certain information or prevent VA officials from sharing certain information with the National Instant Criminal Background Check System in order for vets to be more likely to be able to purchase a gun, even if there is reason to believe that because of mental health crises, they may be a threat to themselves. Right. I have a lot of thoughts on this bill. Firstly, I am always interested to see what makes it this far as veterans' rights go. Now, I want to be really clear. I'm not a veteran. I'm not the child of veterans, but one of my grandfathers was a veteran. And I am of the belief that the best way, and one of the many ways we should honor our veterans, right, is to promote a society and to live in a way that doesn't make it so that we have more veterans in the future. What I'm saying, right, is we want to live in a peaceful way so that we don't have individuals who have to go serve in these wars, experience these traumatic things, and return to a community that additionally, here's another thing that doesn't make it this far as bills for veterans' rights go, treating mental health, treating health for our veterans, getting our veterans who are homeless into homes. These are things that, if you asked me, again, an unaffiliated person, just an observer, just someone who hears these things, right? My inclination would be that those topics that I've just listed are maybe of a higher priority. And I want to say, too, I appreciate that gun ownership goes beyond just, this debate of Second Amendment and rights and who gets to and who doesn't, right? Gun ownership, you know, is an important factor when talking about, are you someone who hunts? Are you someone who does trap shooting? And I appreciate that these are hobbies and also for some lifestyles that something like this, an order that you couldn't purchase a gun moving forward because you're struggling in some way, I can appreciate how that comes across as a slap in the face, especially when we are seeing such a lack of support for mental health for our veterans, right? So they're sort of getting dealt two bad cards. You come home, you are, you know, going through these things. And then additionally, there's not enough help. And then additionally, you could get something that potentially you really care about, like your ability to go hunting, like your ability to go trap shooting, being taken away from you, or the opportunity to do it in the future being taken away. That's not your fault. And I appreciate the sentiment that this feels like a punishment on a group of folks who have already sacrificed in that they have served and that they have come back. And we're saying they can't do something that all other citizens who didn't give that sacrifice, right, they can have it. So all of that is true and all of that is important and all of that is factual. But I think it's also important to talk about what's not written in this bill. And the lack of bills regarding mental health care for our veterans, and the idea that of all the things regarding veterans' rights, of all the pertinent topics, how is it that this is what Republicans have put their time, Republicans in the U.S. Congress who are working on this bill, allow me to be specific in that, how is that what we found time for? How is that what made the top of the priority list? And it concerns me that potentially, and I in no way mean that this is the intent of this, but I fear that if this does pass, while there will be a select number of individuals who this is beneficial for, right? They feel that their right to a gun was taken away incorrectly and they go on to get that right back and their lives are uninterrupted and nothing bad happens. I hope that is the turnout for everyone. But we know from the conversations we had with John on Monday, we know from existing in America and observing what our mental health care system looks like, what our mental health care for veterans system looks like. When we take all those facts into account, the fact is that if this passes, we will see an increase in veteran suicides by gun specifically. And if that isn't at the forefront of this bill, if that isn't the foremost concern for congressmen who are writing this bill, who are working on pushing this forward, who have, through their actions, made it clear that they feel this is the most important thing on their docket, then what, how could this possibly be about veteran safety when it very, very clearly to me places veteran safety in harm's way? I want to say too, I appreciate the ways in which working with things like this can be therapeutic for veterans because of the experience that they may or may not have had overseas involving firearms. And I feel for individuals who are being placed in this system where they feel they're not getting help and are also being cut off from something they care about. But I do think it is an important story to highlight that we have seen at times instances where even other military folks, other veterans helping veterans are the ones actually who are harmed too. If you're familiar with Chris Kyle, who was the author of the book American Sniper, he was a sniper, a military member. He wrote a book about his experiences that became a very big film. And he came home from the Middle East and was taking two other veterans who were dealing with PTSD to a firing range. And one of those young men who was suffering from a number of mental health issues that were going untreated and unnoticed, he, when he was given the gun to engage in practice shooting at the shooting range, he instead fired at Chris Kyle and the other veteran they were there with. And Chris Kyle and the other veteran both died of those injuries. So I think it's relevant to bring up that there's concern. I don't think it's stepping over too cruelly what I feel is the sentiment of this bill, which is we do want vets to be able to experience all the rights for the country that they fought for, right? But we also want our veterans to be supported in ways that ensure that they can be here to enjoy all the rights that this nation they fought for has to offer. Taking you to the break, this is a cover of Mama by My Chemical Romance by cover artist Ani.
WAUK.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, the Friday edition with 0% Maggie Dawn and 100% more Anya, just the way you ordered it. Let's talk about gun rights and let's talk about safety and let's try to not freak out while we do it. And if you'd like to be a part of that discussion, I would love it if you would give me a call at 844-967-2789. Or again, you can always text us using the Civic Media app. You can download it as long as you have a smartphone. Anything that has a touch screen essentially should work. And you can click text and it'll come right to us. Let's check. Do we have any texts for this show? Not yet. So jump on it, folks. I got to hear from you. In the last section, I talked about the bill Republicans are pushing through the U.S. Congress to sort of relax some of the standards as they apply to veterans who are experiencing mental health issues and whether or not those veterans can purchase guns or continue to own guns during the time that they are going through that mental health crisis. And what does it mean to relax those standards? What does it mean for the rights of veterans? But also, what will it mean for, to speak frankly, the veteran suicide rate? When we understand that there are so many suicides that occur, especially by men, involving guns, That is what the research of John Dietrich, who he had on Monday, supported, or proved, rather. In addition to this, in a very different way, there's another gun bill being pushed through to relax standards for gun ownership regarding people who have been convicted for domestic violence. Now, let me be very, very clear. We are moving on to a new topic. I do not want people to conflate my opinions on the veteran gun bill with what I'm about to discuss. As I said, I feel for the veterans who are placed in this limbo between getting the mental health help that they need and also having the access and rights to the things that are enshrined in our Constitution like everyone else, right? I understand that. Totally different side of things. Let's talk about the insane idea that individuals who we've already caught doing domestic violence, whether that is physical violence, stalking, having certain restraining orders, right? In what world are we looking at all the different things we could legislate on and picking, do you know what? Let's get more stalkers some guns. Let's not infringe upon the rights of those who chose to hurt people, right? Let's not do that. Again, we're talking about the domestic violence gun bill. Let's talk too about what life looks like right now, what the statistics on gun violence looks like right now before we play any more fast or any more loose with these gun laws, right? 70 women a month, 70 women a month are shot and killed by their intimate partner, whether that's a boyfriend, a husband, something that doesn't have a term, an ex perhaaps. 70 women a month are shot and killed. In addition to that, it's estimated through reporting, so through women reporting to this institution, that 4.5 million living women worldwide, 4.5 million women worldwide report that at some point in their life, they were threatened by a partner who used a gun, meaning a gun was pointed at them. It was brandished. It was maybe it wasn't picked up, but it was pointed to and said, look, if you don't do what I want, I'm going to use that. 4.5 million living women report that has happened. And that's just, again, whenever it comes to these statistics about reporting, you have to understand that there is a number greater than that that represents the reality of how many women have been threatened, because there are women who will never report it or never have the opportunity to report it. Women in parts of our world still today, in parts of our country, in parts of our state, if I'm being real, who don't, because of the insane culture that women are thrust into in this world, don't even realize that being threatened with a gun in a relationship is wrong. Right? Is that, if that's something they were raised seeing, why would it clock with them that that's not right? By the way, let me be clear. Of those 1.5 million women who say they were threatened by a partner using a gun, 1 million of them had an instance where that gun was fired at them. So not just holding the gun, not just pointing the gun, not just waving it around to make a point about what someone will do if they're not listened to, but actually firing potentially multiple times. The question was, has it ever been fired once? And a million women said yes. How many of those million was the answer, oh yes, every time he threatened me with a gun, he fired it. Or every time we would have a fight, I would end up with some sort of injury from gunfire. So how can we possibly, as a country that is involved in so many issues right now, domestically and internationally, how can we, as a country still reeling from COVID, still reeling from a number of other national tragedies, mass losses of human life, and the concurrent nonstop onslaught of misogynistic violence that already exists involving domestic violence and guns? How are we looking at that mishmash of stuff, of junk, of insane moments in the moment in the history we are living through, right? How can we possibly look at that and go, do you know what's really important? Making it worse. Putting into the hands of people. And by the way, this is not take gun rights away from anyone accused of domestic violence, right? We would understand immediately how that goes beyond innocent until proven guilty. But these are individuals who have not only already committed one crime, but committed it and been sentenced for it. As far as the law goes, we already know that they are not responsible enough to behave in civil society without harming the person that they are domestically partnered with. They can't handle it. You, as I phrased it when I was a teacher, if someone picked up a toy and hit another kid over the head with it, and you know, it's a car, that's not what it's for. I would pick it up and I say, you lost your privilege to it. You've proven you're not ready for it. You've proven you're not mature enough for it. You've proven that you make poor choices. So no, you don't get to have this thing that everyone else gets to enjoy because they haven't made the similar poor choices that you have, or at the very least been caught making those poor choices and subsequently punished for it. If you have thoughts on this, I'd love to hear from you. I know it's a Friday. I know that gun violence is probably the last thing you want to be talking about. Me too, but something's got to fill the airwaves, and hopefully it's your voice too. Give me a call, 844-967-2789. We'll be back right after this.
Janie's got a gun. Janie's got a gun. The dog days just begun. Now everybody.
Long sleeve blouses and makeup to cover a bruise. Well, she finally got the nerve to file for divorce.
That Earl's restraining order wasn't enough for him to not be given access to a gun, and he later used it to kill both of them. Is that the story that we want to rewrite for the Dixie Chicks? Or do we maybe feel like anything's changed in the, how long has it been since this song originally came out? This was posted to YouTube in 2012. I'm sure that's not right. But hey, listen, what matters is that this is the Maggie Dawn Show and that I am Anya, her producer, stepping in for you, for her, not to talk to you on the Friday edition. And we are talking about two very different gun bills that both bring up different safety concerns for different reasons. One is a bill in the U.S. Congress looking to relax restrictions on gun ownership for vets who are having mental health issues. It would allow more vets who may have those issues to access guns by restricting what the VA can say to the bureau that runs the instant background check for guns, right? Essentially, the VA cannot send, or what it would want is the VA is less able to send notes to that background check office that say, hey, this person right now is struggling. We have reason to believe that they're a danger to themselves or others. If they try to purchase a gun, they shouldn't be allowed to. This new bill wants to roll that back. The other bill we're talking about, which is very, very different, is to relax restrictions on gun ownership for people already convicted of domestic violence. Now, this is obviously far on the other end of the spectrum from talking about veterans' rights. We can, of course, sympathize with why it comes across, why it is unfair that veterans who serve this country return to a country where mental health care is not, frankly, always great, is not always accessible, is not always affordable, is not always encouraged to be attended by certain groups, right? That it is culturally strange to go to therapy or to need mental health care. And then to throw on the additional insult to that injury that is, oh, in addition to that, because you're struggling, we're going to take away your right to have this thing. And I can completely sympathize with how that may feel, right? And then on the far, far end from that is this domestic violence case where someone has already been caught being violent and convicted for it, but I guess they can just have a gun. That's that other bill. That's what we've been discussing. Here to discuss it with me is Lee on the phone lines. Lee, did you say you were from Yuma? Is that where you're calling in from?
Yuma, Wisconsin. Yes.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. I am a 80-year-old veteran, United States Air Force.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. I've not seen combat, but I've had friends that have, and there's things that are seen in combat that no one should see.
Right.
I'm afraid that our government has let us down by sending people to war but not taking care of them once they come back. Mm-hmm. I think this is something the government ought to be required to do, and they don't. Mm-hmm. I think the GI Bill needs to be put back in its full so that people can advance in their lives. I am a hunter. I enjoy guns. I have bolt actions because I shoot once and get my prey. And no one should have these multiple, military-style weapons. Mm-hmm. The Constitution says we should have a well-regulated militia. Mm-hmm. Well, the militia was people because we did not have an armed force at that time that was organized. And we've gone way beyond that. And we are not well regulated as a civilian militia. I think these laws ought to be enforced. I don't think Republicans ought to go with the NRA and reduce things, because people that are a threat need to be held in check. Mm-hmm. When servicemen come back and they've had traumatic experiences, maybe at that time they should not be allowed to have guns for the time being. I mean, right. Something should be visited again later. But people that do domestic violence, that threaten wives, they should not have any access to weaponry. They're a threat to themselves and to others, and they just should not have it.
I agree with you there, Lee, and I agree with a lot of your points. Let me ask you this, because I am not a veteran, and I'm interested in your feedback. And I don't know if today's the first time you heard of it, but hearing about this veteran gun bill wanting to restrict when the VA can make the call and say, we're concerned about this person, do you as a veteran feel the concern that I'm feeling, or am I maybe going too far with this? What are your thoughts?
I'm 100% in your corner. I think people that have been determined to be a threat need to be taken care of. I think that, mental health professionals ought to be called in, and they ought to, see proper attention so that they can come back and live as a normal human being, that's been cured of the trauma that they've been through.
Right.
And I think all that happens, you're exactly right. They ought to not have access to these guns. Like I say, I'm a hunter. Mm-hmm. And one shot, one trophy, one buck, whatever I'm shooting at. And so many people, can you imagine how many holes you'd have in an animal if they shot an M whatever at these guys? I mean,
right. I'm sorry to pause you there, Lee. Thank you for your input. And I agree. I think if you shot a deer with some of these AK-47s they talk about, I don't know what kind of, coat you're going to make out of that hide after, but it's going to look more like Swiss cheese, right? But Lee, I appreciate what you said, that this concern is valid, that we have reason to worry when someone is a threat to themselves, and that mental health professionals feel, and frankly, not even just feel, know through their training, through being mental health care professionals, that this person at that moment is exhibiting signs of distress in a way that could lead to them acting on wanting to kill themselves. And Lee's point is fantastic. The idea that this is not, as far as this the veterans bill goes, this is not a life sentence we're discussing. This is not, oh, you had one bad weekend and now we have revoked your ability to purchase a gun forever. This is something that in a system that works, we would like to see individuals enter it for a period of time and exit it when, as Lee said, they've been cured of these traumas. Now, is there a cure for trauma? I'm not sure. But at the very least, curing the symptoms of the trauma in that moment that is potentially things like suicidal ideation, a deep frustration that leads to hurting themselves or others. These are the things we have to work on, things that can be worked on so that this person is able to go on to the rest of their life, be able to do these things. I see we have two callers on the line. Interesting scenario right now. So this is Anya. I am the producer and the host today. So I can't screen your calls while I'm in the section here. But if you'll wait with me till the break, I'll get your name. I'll check you, vet you, all these things, and I will have you on in the next section. In the time until that, I want to discuss two interesting examples, maybe where this whole domestic violence case I've been discussing, different from the veterans case, right? The domestic violence bill is this idea that we're going to start relaxing gun access issues. Sorry, let me start this sentence over again. I completely lost it. The domestic violence bill is about relaxing gun restrictions as they pertain to people who have already been convicted of domestic violence. There, that's the sentence I was looking for. But why? Why should we allow people who have already been convicted of domestic violence to have guns? This seems completely anti-ethical. And if your statement is, well, you know, as far as law goes, you can't just take things away when people, you know, don't behave. Anya, the world is not the kindergarten classroom that you cut your teeth in when it came to teaching. Rather, it's somehow worse than a kindergarten classroom because no one lines up anymore, right? But let me make two examples of times where we very much do revoke the freedoms of certain individuals, like we are doing with domestic violence convicts, right? Here's one. I didn't know about this until this year, that if, and I don't know if this is state by state or if this is federal, but at the very least it exists in Wisconsin, that people convicted of sex crimes, especially when it comes to pedophiles, cannot decorate their homes at all for Halloween. Now, why would that be taken away? Did they commit their crime on Halloween? No, the vast majority, no, it's not contingent on that. Were they in some way affiliated with trick-or-treating when they harmed the people that they harmed? No. But rather, we understand culturally that trick-or-treating or Halloween itself is a children's holiday. That's not to diminish any adults who like it, but that the main activity involving decorating houses is to tell kids, hey, this house is participating in the activity that is trick-or-treating. Walk up to the door, knock, and speak with the adult there. And of course, we do not want kids doing that to homes that contain sex offenders. So instead of putting the onus for that on every family and every child to memorize where in their neighborhood, because they are somewhere in their neighborhood, where the sex offenders are, instead, local police will check on the homes of convicted sex offenders to ensure that there are no decorations up so that no one in their right mind could misconstrue that this house was participating in trick-or-treating, because, of course, we do not want kids walking up to homes that sex offenders are known to be inside of, right? So we take that away, and we take that away for life from sex offenders. We take away getting to decorate for Halloween, despite the fact that, I mean, is that not free speech? Is it not constitutional? Is it not all these things? Yes, it is, but guess what? At some point in that individual's life, they made it quite clear that they could not be trusted to engage with the culture that is Halloween, the culture that is getting to participate in the upbringing of the kids around you, right? You forfeit that when you choose, because of all the crimes, sex crimes are always a choice. We can talk about, right, there's assault and there's assault in self-defense. Someone scared you, you punched him back, right? We can talk about self-defense in that way. But there is no, of course, sex crimes in self-defense. So what we're talking about are people who chose to make a terrible decision to hurt people. And part of their punishment for that is you don't get to participate in some of the rights that other people do. I'll take it a step further. In Somerset, England recently, a man was caught writhing around on the ground in a park at night in an all-black suit and mask. And he was doing this not because it was Halloween, but because it was gratifying to him. I'll phrase it that way. And when he was caught and arrested, he never spoke to anyone, never touched anyone, didn't run after anyone. But nonetheless, he was a nuisance and a harm in public. And we can, of course, understand that perhaps if the opportunity arose to cause harm, that person could take it. That punishment carried out for him in England was very simple. He is banned from wearing all black, from owning a mask, and from writhing on the ground in public for 5 years. Well, it's every Brit's right to writhe around on the ground. We've earned it. Too bad. He lost it. He lost it when he went out and made a bad decision. Don't make a bad decision. Don't change the dial. Instead, stay here and enjoy the Dixie Chicks, Goodbye Earl, an anthem about doing what you have to when it comes to men like that. Be back shortly.
The Shaw, WAUK.
Welcome back to the last section of the last Maggie Dawn show of this week. Don't fret. There's more on Monday. Same time, same place. It'll be me again. And it'll be me again on Tuesday. And it'll be me again on Wednesday. And then, you're not going to believe it, the Maggie Dawn show returns to its former glory with Maggie Dawn in tow. It's going to be a great week next week. I have a bunch of surprises I cannot talk about yet. But when I do, you're not going to want to miss it. So you better be here. All right. And some folks who are here right now are on the phone line. We're wrapping up, but you can still give me a call, 844-967-2789. Let us first hear from Anne in Watertown. Annie, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good to hear.
A while back, I heard that, I read that, I don't know what the rules are in Israel, but it was customary that the soldiers, which everybody, you know, is pretty much 100%, everybody joins the service, they would take their guns home. And when they changed that and did not allow the soldiers to take their guns home with them, the suicide rate fell dramatically.
Mm, okay.
Which I thought was interesting. But with both of these things, with the gun issue, with both bills, with domestic violence, and vets being able to have them, it goes beyond, I think, just the guns, where I would hope that we would learn that domestic violence is much deeper and should be more, people should be made more aware, like young people should know the signs of what a potential, when somebody's going to be abusive to you, right. There are signs and things that people go along with, and it's just not known. And dealing with courts, the judges don't know. I was told in a situation like that, well, why didn't you just do what he told you to do? Right. Like, it was all my fault. You know, this is by the judge, you know.
Yeah.
But, and I liked what you said about, you know, how it would be great if we didn't have so many veterans. But also, we should take the responsibility of caring for them much more than we do.
Yes, yeah.
And also, included in that, there should be responsibility on their part to understand the training that they've had, you know, which is probably educating them as part of their training, but to understand coming back to civilian life, that it's a separate thing from what they were trained, what we spent our money and trained them to do to be killers. We have to somehow be able to undo that.
It's an interesting system that we have, right, involving the process that someone goes through from being a civilian to being a soldier to coming back home to, in theory, be a civilian again. But of course, can anyone go through so many changes and how drastic these changes are? I can't speak to this as a veteran, but as someone who had someone close to me become a very different person after their service, right? We can understand that between training and the things that they see in the service, we are not setting our veterans up for success already in the way that we run that system, right? So when they exit that system and return home, it's no wonder that they feel lost and abandoned, because frankly, in many instances, we have lost and we have abandoned them, right? I think those are a lot of good points. Mark from the SAC, how are you today?
I'm doing great. And as somebody who just, you know, had the dog out for a couple hours this morning trying to get a pheasant, didn't, but, you know, I took my rifle and the county range, got it sighted in, and all this, you know, four shots, and it was dead on, you know, for my deer hunting. Mm. I'm fully behind people under domestic violence convictions not being able to have firearms. Mm-hmm. And for the people who have been flagged for having a mental lapse, to put it that way, having a temporary hold put on their ability to have firearms, that's probably a good idea, a very good idea, because, you know, that should the rights of everybody around that person be negated, you know, subjected to the potential that this person might do harm to others as well.
I think that's a really, sorry to cut you off there, Mark. I think that is the perfect summary of it, right? The right to have it can extend only so far as everyone else's right to survive you having it. And not just survive in the sense of not pass away, not be killed, but to survive unharmed, unscathed, untraumatized, right? Not all the statistics I spoke about today involved physical maiming. But I did read the statistic earlier that 4.5 million women worldwide report. So remember, there's a number there that go unreported, but 4.5 million women are reporting that they've been threatened by someone, by a partner, an intimate partner using a gun throughout their dating, throughout their relationship, right? And that 1 million of those 4.5 million women report that gun was fired at least once during one of those altercations. That too is not surviving, nor is it thriving. It is just barely getting through. And we have to change our approach to these things. We have to change our priorities. Are our priorities that some individuals who have had domestic violence charges but would otherwise be, you know, really, really strong trap shooters? Is that more integral to our daily lives as U.S. citizens than the continued existence of other U.S. citizens who would otherwise lose their lives to gun violence, be it intimate or not? That was one really long question to end the week with. but you've got time to ponder it as we go into the weekend. It's been great talking with all of you fantastic callers today. I will be back with you bright and early tomorrow with This Week in Waukesha, followed by Morning Cannolis, followed by the final Carroll football game for those listening regions. Everyone else, enjoy whatever they put out on the weekends. I only listen to the stuff I produce. Have a good one. This has been The Maggie Dawn Show. Oh, with Anya Astor.